News 1A. I'm Jen White in Washington. Democrats have won the most votes in 7 of the last 8 presidential elections. So why did a Democrat only become president in 5 of them? You can thank or blame the Electoral College. The Electoral College will meet next month to vote, and President-elect Joe Biden is expected to win. But why do we even have a system where the victor could be someone who didn't win a majority of votes? We asked you what you thought of the system, and, well, the consensus was overwhelming in one direction.
Hi, this is Carol from Colonial Williamsburg. I think the Electoral College should be retired. Those who put it in place thought it was necessary back then, but now it just needs to go.
I'm Susan from Bishop, California. The demographics of our country have hugely changed since the Electoral College was put in place. The big states are just much bigger than the small states now. Small states would still have outsized representation in the Senate, so they wouldn't be forgotten.
I'm Don from Madison, Wisconsin. If democracy is one person, one vote, I don't see why we need an electoral college.
I'm a Democrat voting in a heavily Republican state, so I feel disenfranchised at the top of the ballot. We don't need the electoral college anymore. We are one nation, not a bunch of colonies.
A September Gallup poll found that 61% of Americans want to change the way we elect our president. But is that just a pipe dream? What about the way we elect our senators or representatives? Joining us now to talk about the process is Nina Ahmad. She's a Democratic elector for Pennsylvania and a former candidate for Pennsylvania Auditor General. Nina, welcome to 1A.
Thank you for having me. Hello.
Also with us is Ned Foley. He's the director of the Election Law Program at The Ohio State University's College of Law. He's also author of Presidential Elections and Majority Rule, The Rise, Demise, and Potential Restoration of the Jeffersonian Electoral College. Ned, welcome to 1A.
Good to be with you.
So Ned, the Electoral College, just quickly break it down for us. What is it and why do we still have it?
Well, it goes to states' rights and federalism, like some of your commentators said. Originally, the framers of the Constitution wanted to emphasize that we weren't just one nation, as we sometimes think of ourselves now, but that we were these different states, almost like the countries in Europe. If you imagine the European Union coming together, France and Germany and Britain, back then, they thought Virginia and Massachusetts and New York had that kind of special identity that we've kind of lost over time.
Why do we still have it?
Because it's so hard to amend the Constitution. The Gallup poll, as you said, 60% of Americans now want to get rid of it. That's been as high as 80% over the last 50 years. But to get a constitutional amendment, you need 2/3 of each House of Congress, and then 3/4 of the states have to ratify. It's come close a couple of times back in the late 1960s. It came very close in Congress, but just couldn't get over the finish line.
Break down the numbers for us. What was the vote difference in this year's presidential election when it comes to the popular vote versus the Electoral College?
Yeah, so I'm looking at the New York Times website now. So we've got Joe Biden winning 51% essentially of the popular vote nationwide, over 78 million ballots. Donald Trump has won over 73 million ballots for a little more than 43% of the popular vote. So that's roughly 51% to 47% nationwide. In the Electoral College, as it stands now, again, the New York Times is saying Biden won 306 electoral votes to Donald Trump's 232. And 306 happens to be the number that Trump won in 2016, even though, of course, the popular vote outcome was very different in 2016.
Nina, how did you become an elector for Pennsylvania?
I didn't know that I was an elector till I got a call. So the presidential nominee makes that choice. So somehow I landed up as an elector. So to tell you the truth, I don't know how.
How are you thinking about the vote you'll cast on December 14th?
I am a faithful elector. I can't wait to cast my vote to end this last 4 years of terror. So I am firmly committed to being a faithful elector.
Walk us through the process for you as an elector. We, the people, voted. The result is not official until the electors cast their ballot. So what happens for you over the next couple of weeks?
So we actually get, I guess they're deciding how we're going to do this. Normally, it's a You go to Harrisburg, to the capital in Pennsylvania, and there's a small room where people cast their votes. Because of the pandemic, I think the Department of State is trying to figure out how exactly they're going to do it. We don't know as of yet, but December 14th, in general, in normal circumstances, we would have assembled at 12 noon in Harrisburg and signed those the paper that says that I am voting for President Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris.
And then those results would be certified by Congress on January 6th. We got this email from Darla who says, America does not have to go through the insanity of this and other recent presidential elections. It shouldn't come down to a few suburbs and massive resources directed to small parts of this country. My vote in Northeast Tennessee should count in presidential elections too. Could Congress enact a law to require that states allocate their electoral votes according to popular votes? The current system is minority rule. It's time to fix this. Nina, what do you think about the Electoral College and what it means for representation?
So as you said at the top of this program, you know, people definitely want to change. I believe in Colorado, they actually passed, it was on the ballot where they are part of the compact, the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact, and that is still using the Electoral College, but they are a representative of the votes received, and the way they said they would allocate them would be the, you know, taking the popular vote and then using that as the way to cast the electoral votes of those states participating in that compact. I'm not sure how, you know, it needs more states to get in there. That seems to be an interim step to removing the Electoral College. So, you know, it brings the questions of other things, like we pick our senators, you know, that they're not really representative of the population either. We have two senators per state, but we allocate our House of Representatives by population. So I think this was supposed to be a compromise, but I think its utility is waning, is what I feel myself personally.
That's Nina Ahmad. She's a Democratic elector for Pennsylvania and a former candidate for Pennsylvania Auditor General. Nina, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you so much.
And still with us is Ned Foley. He's the director of the Election Law Program at The Ohio State University's College of Law. And joining us now is David Litt. He's a former speechwriter for President Obama. He's also the author of the new book, Democracy in One Book or Less, How It Works, Why It Doesn't, and Why Fixing It is Easier Than You Think. David, welcome back to 1A.
Thank you so much for having me back.
So, Ned, we heard Nina there allude to an interstate pact around electoral votes. Can you explain a little bit more about what's happening there?
Sure. So as she was saying, it's a very clever idea. It's to use the Electoral College almost against itself, because the magic number in the Electoral College is 270. That's a majority of votes. And any candidate who gets that wins under the Constitution. So if you pool together enough states to have 270 electoral votes among those states, they can control the outcome. So the thought is, let's get enough states to agree to base their electoral votes not on their own states, but on the overall national popular vote. And once that pooling takes place, it can affect the outcome just by the number of votes that they have in the pool. This idea has been around since 2000. It's gotten more states to sign on since 2016. It's still not enough yet. It hasn't reached the magic number of 270. I think it's still about 70 votes short in terms of states joining in. So it's an interesting idea, but practically speaking, it hasn't gotten adopted. And the whole goal was to try to figure out a way to get a national popular vote without a constitutional amendment. They thought that would be easier, but it just hasn't happened yet.
So just so we understand, any given state would look at the national popular vote and then base the distribution of their electoral votes based on that?
Correct. So think of it, like, suppose Florida joined the compact. You know, this year, Florida voted, you know, for Trump in terms of its own vote. But if Florida were a member of the compact, it would say, Florida has 29 electoral votes, and it would say, our 29 electoral votes won't go to the choice of the people in Florida, it will go to the overall choice of the people of the United States, which was in favor of Biden. So, you know, that's the concept of the compact. But I can see, you know, that example shows why it's hard to get a state like Florida to adopt it, because if states adopt it and they're the pivotal state, they're kind of going, by definition, they're going against their own state in favor of the national outcome.
Well, we did get one message in support of the Electoral College.
Hello, this is Gail. I believe that we're a republic. The United States is a republic, which means we elect representatives. And having an Electoral College lets states have a vote for electors for president, and states elect representation instead of the population centers having undue representation in electing the president. So I think the Electoral College is good.
David, what do you think of Gail's take here?
Well, I think the Electoral College is fascinating, in part because most of what we think about it and most of what we learned about it growing up is totally wrong. And this is what I've been spending a lot of time on for the last couple of years, is this idea that if we really want to understand what our leaders do, we have to really understand what our government is, how it functions, what the structure looks like, and why. And the Electoral College actually has absolutely nothing to do with federalism. A lot of really smart people think that the Electoral College is an extension of the Great Compromise, that idea that we, you know, we have two senators per state, but then we have the House divided on population. You hear that a lot. But what's interesting is when you look at the Constitutional Convention, one of my favorite stories, James Madison, who believed that population should decide representation, he and his college roommate, this guy named Gunning Bedford Jr. from Delaware, they almost came to blows over how we would be organized. Would we be a federation of states, or would we be based on population? They didn't argue about the Electoral College. And the reason is that the Electoral College is actually here for three independent purposes, almost none of which make sense today. I'm going to run through them really quickly. The most important one is just logistics. At the time the Electoral College was created, we had dirt roads. We weren't a country yet. You couldn't hold a single national election. You had to do it in stages, just from a purely functional logistical perspective. And then there's another important reason, which is slavery. So the Electoral College was designed to be an extension of not the Great Compromise, but the Three-Fifths Compromise. The Three-Fifths Compromise, as you may remember, it said every enslaved person counts for three-fifths of a person toward representation in the House. And the electors, the number of electors each state gets, is the number of representatives plus their number of senators. So by basing electoral votes on the number of representatives rather than the number of eligible voters, because enslaved people clearly couldn't vote, Southern states, slave states, got extra credit for people they enslaved. And that was an important sticking point in the Electoral College. And I think the last point I would say is, if you think about this common argument that the Electoral College benefits small states, you didn't see the candidates in Vermont, you didn't see them in Hawaii or in Arkansas or in either of the Dakotas. The Electoral College doesn't benefit small states or rural states, it benefits swing states. If you lived in a close state in this election, your vote was very actively courted by both candidates. If you're someone like me who did not live in a swing state, nobody asked for your vote. And that's what the Electoral College really does.
Well, we got a message from Bill, who has concerns about so-called faithless electors.
I was just thinking about how one of the reasons why Trump is delaying accepting Joe Biden, and just crossed my mind that Electoral College don't seem to be committed to voting where they're supposed to vote. So I'm wondering whether he's out there trying to either bribe or coerce or otherwise convince electoral voters to switch to him by December to steal the election that way.
Bill's not the only one who had that concern. Terry emailed, in this era of bucking the rules and norms, what if some electoral voters are among those who don't believe or want to accept that Trump didn't win and they don't follow the spirit of the process by voting properly? What then? Ned, are these valid concerns?
Well, in theory, maybe, but I think as a practical matter, no. I mean, because Biden has 306 electoral votes or is projected to, I doubt there's any chance of derailing the Electoral College process and sort of taking away his victory away from him. So, you know, there are things to be concerned about our system, and we do need change in the future, but that threat I'm not worried about.
Historically speaking, are there examples of this happening?
Yeah, sure. I mean, back in 2016, there was a whole movement to try to get faithless electors to prevent President Trump's eventual victory. It fizzled out. In fact, it caused Hillary Clinton to lose more electors that she was entitled to have, you know, compared to Donald Trump. And there have been isolated examples in history of so-called faithless electors, but they've never been consequential. And so, had this election been, close in the Electoral College, had it ended up being 270 to 268, then, I would be a little bit concerned that there might be just one rogue elector who could really destabilize the system. The Supreme Court has tried to prevent that with a decision earlier this year. But what the Supreme Court did was authorize states to tighten up their laws to prevent it. But the states actually have to have the right kind of laws, and only about 15 states do. So,
well, to that end, but because we've got to go to a break quickly, but Becca emailed, I'm hoping someone could speak to the possibility that the delay is a way to change what happens with electors. My understanding is the states will choose their own electors if the count is not certified by mid-December. In that case, Trump's team may intend to pressure friendly governors to choose electors other than what the vote would warrant. Can anyone reassure me otherwise? Ned?
Yeah, so very quickly, I've been worried about this for well over a year, but it's not going to happen this year because of how, the results turned out in the election. Had it been really closer, maybe something to worry about, but right now, no, it's not going to happen.
We're speaking with Ned Foley. He's the director of the Election Law Program at The Ohio State University's College of Law. And David Litt, he's author of the new book, Democracy in One Book or Less, How It Works, Why It Doesn't, and Why Fixing It is Easier Than You Think. Susan emailed, we don't need big ideas about how to elect our president. We simply need to finally get rid of the Electoral College and guarantee the obvious. One person, one vote, nothing more or less. Brian writes on Facebook, the Electoral College is a great system and ensures the large cities, the most populous states, don't dominate the choice of president. Without the Electoral College, New York City, Los Angeles, and Chicago would pick our president. And Jeremy writes on Facebook, everyone arguing for the Electoral College is saying that some people's votes should count more than others. This fact cannot be escaped. I'm Jen White. We'll hear more from you and our guests in a moment. Do you talk about the news with your friends, your family, or maybe perfect strangers? You can get all the facts you need to be up to speed on this busy news cycle on the 1A News Roundup. Find the podcast in your feed every Friday.
Democrats are celebrating an election win, but one party leader is thinking about the long game.
Some of the bigger challenges in bringing the country together, that's going to be a project that goes beyond just one election.
Barack Obama on his new memoir, The Election of Joe Biden and What Comes Next. Listen on Consider This from NPR.
Now let's get back to the Electoral College and Representation in Government with Ned Foley. He's the director of the Election Law Program at The Ohio State University's College of Law. Also with us, David Litt, author of the new book, Democracy in One Book or Less, How It Works, Why It Doesn't, and Why Fixing It is Easier Than You Think. Well, we got this voicemail from Professor Jay in Houston. Here's what he had to say about the Electoral College.
If we go back to the 1780s, we understand that Alexander Hamilton and other founding fathers were concerned about the so-called tyranny of the majority, that they were the elite of the elite. They were creating a government that would protect their individual property rights and their political influence. They created the Electoral College to prevent the common folks from having any input into selecting either the president, as well as the fact that senators were to be chosen by the elite in state legislatures. So this was about political control and influence. That is, the birth of the Electoral College was designed to make sure that the common folks did not have the final say-so in choosing a president.
I want to hear from both of you, Ned and David, on what we just heard there about this system being an effort to protect a certain type of elitism. Ned?
Yeah, so one thing that I learned from doing the book that I wrote last year was that our Electoral College is not the original one. This was something that I didn't understand and I think is widely misunderstood. There was the first Electoral College that the founders put in the original Constitution in the Philadelphia Convention. But the one that governs us is actually the product of the 12th Amendment, which was ratified in 1804 and it was a product of the aftermath of the really difficult election of 1800. And I didn't appreciate just how significant the reengineering of the Electoral College was as a result of Congress rewriting it in 1803 and then sending the amendment to the states. It wasn't just a mere technical fix. The debates in Congress really were philosophical and deliberated about what they wanted the Electoral College to do. And real quickly, I think there's just a couple of key points about this. The original Electoral College was built for George Washington. The idea that there would be a consensus winner who would be above the parties. They had hoped the original Constitution would prevent the creation of political parties. Well, that didn't happen. And we had intense party competition between the so-called Federalists on one side, Hamilton and Adams, and then the Jeffersonians, Thomas Jefferson and James Madison on the other. And that's why the system really derailed in 1800, and they needed to rebuild it. And so when they built it for two-party competition, us versus them, and, you know, the Federalists versus Jeffersonians. And the Jeffersonians who were in power, in part because they really did well in the midterms of 1802, had enough votes for a constitutional amendment. And they sent to the states a new version that was built on a concept of majority rule. If it's going to be two-party competition, it should be the majority party, not the minority party. There's going to be no consensus. But their conception of majority rule was based for a federal system. They didn't want a national popular vote majority rule. I personally favor a national popular vote. I'd like to get rid of the Electoral College. But I think if we want to understand what our system actually is, we have to understand the 12th Amendment and not just focus on the Philadelphia Convention of 1787.
David, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting, the call that you got. I think it's an example of the wisdom of Benjamin Franklin, who once said, you know, man is a reasonable creature. He can come up with a reason for anything. What we are seeing right now is that the main reason the Electoral College is currently popular in some circles, if we're being honest, is not that it has any particular principle or basis in fact. In fact, it has very little to do with elitism. Unlike the Senate, which was chosen by state legislators, the state legislatures could pick the way that people chose electors, and almost all of them almost immediately chose to do it through statewide popular vote. They put a lot of trust in the people, not in the elites. What we're seeing instead is an enthusiasm for the Electoral College based on a belief that it helps Republicans. And that's why you've seen conservatives in general come up with new reasons that the Electoral College is an American institution. Back in the 1970s, 1960s, Richard Nixon, a Republican president, tried to get rid of the Electoral College because he understood that the Electoral College is not actually something that benefits Republicans or Democrats. And I worked for President Obama on the 2012 reelection campaign. In that campaign, President Obama was the one who could have lost the popular vote by a percentage point or two and still won with the Electoral College. So what we're seeing is this kind of rebranding of the Electoral College because the conservative movement believes that the structural inequalities in American government, the ways that some people's votes matter more than others, benefit them. When it comes to the Electoral College, that's not necessarily true in the long term, although it's been true for President Trump. And more importantly, it's not even the most aggressive of these structural inequalities that we've discussed briefly, the way the Senate is set up, the way that gerrymandering can work. Those sorts of things matter more. But I think one of the things that we see with the Electoral College is that fundamentally, you know, the way I put it in the book is it's kind of just like playing Russian roulette with democracy. There's no particular point to it. Most of the time, it doesn't do anything. And then every so often, you get this huge mess that someone else has to clean up. And that's the Electoral College in a nutshell.
Well, we got this email from Greg who says, removal of the Electoral College process would divide our nation more than it already is and drive a larger wedge between rural and urban, blue and red. The Electoral College process forces presidential candidates to pay attention to the whole country. I firmly believe that the Electoral College process is a good thing and should remain so that the concerns of the whole nation are addressed by our candidates. Ned, your thoughts, because you say you think the Electoral College should get the boot.
I do. I would love there to be a constitutional amendment to replace it with a national popular vote. I do think one insight from those 12th Amendment debates is worth keeping, and that is the difference between majority winners and what is sometimes technically called plurality winners. A plurality winner is the candidate who gets the most votes, but that isn't a majority necessarily if you have three or more candidates. And just as they were rebuilding the Electoral College for a two-party competition between, say, John Adams and Thomas Jefferson, what they didn't anticipate was the way in which a third party or independent candidate can fragment the field. And if we go to a national popular vote, I think we have to make a fundamental choice whether we want to guarantee that the winner gets a majority, 50% or more, or just more than anybody else. You know, if you think of Ross Perot back in 1992, some other elections in American history, you can have the effect of third parties affecting the competition between the two main parties. In fact, my belief is that this is what explains why there was a discrepancy between the Electoral College outcome and the national popular vote in both 2000 and 2016. It's pretty clear that the misalignment in 2000 was the result of Ralph Nader being on the ballot as an extra candidate and pulling environmentalists and other progressives away from Al Gore, and that if it had just been a two-party race, as many people thought it was, I think Gore would have clearly won Florida and then won the Electoral College, and we wouldn't have to worry about hanging chads and all the rest. Likewise, I think most people don't appreciate the effect that Gary Johnson and Jill Stein had as extra candidates on the ballot in 2016. And I think, you know, it's a little more complicated to prove statistically, but I think had it been just a two-party race between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton back in 2016, Hillary Clinton might well have won the three critical states of Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. The key point here is that Donald Trump was under 50% in all of the key states that gave him his Electoral College victory. Those three states, plus Florida and Arizona and North Carolina, he was taking all of the electoral votes in states where he won less than 50%. So there were more votes cast against him than for him, and yet he was getting all of the electoral votes from those states. That's actually not how the system was supposed to work. If you go back and read the debates of the 12th Amendment, they wanted majority rule, again, and they thought that majority rule would come from getting an Electoral College majority based on accumulating majorities within enough states. But Donald Trump got his Electoral College majority without state-based majorities. So it was the system going awry. And it was the research for trying to figure out why that happened that led to my book. And it's a story that takes place over the remainder of the 19th century and into the 20th about how operationally what happens in state law is disconnected from how the 12th Amendment and the Electoral College is supposed to work. And we could actually fix that without a constitutional amendment, even though I'd like one, or even without this national popular vote compact idea that, you know, is a nice idea, but we haven't gotten it yet. If battleground states just required winning the majority of the popular vote in those states to get those states' electoral votes, we could have avoided the misalignment of 2000 and 2016. It wouldn't solve every problem, but it would be an intermediate step before we can get the constitutional amendment that we need.
Well, there's plenty more to talk about regarding the Electoral College, and we'll do just that with our guests right after a short break. Stay with us. This is 1A from WAMU and NPR.
Since the 1980s, hip-hop and America's prisons have grown side by side.
And we're going to investigate this connection to see how it lifts us up and holds us down.
Hip-hop is talking about what we live, trying to live the American dream, failing at the American dream.
I'm Sydney Madden.
I'm Rodney Carmichael. Listen now to the Louder Than a Riot podcast from NPR Music,
where we trace the collision of rhyme and punishment in America.
This is 1A, and we're continuing our conversation about the Electoral College with Ned Foley, law professor and author of Presidential Elections and Majority Rule, The Rise, Demise, and Potential Restoration of the Jeffersonian Electoral College, and David Litt. His new book is called Democracy in One Book or Less, How It Works, Why It Doesn't, and Why Fixing It is Easier Than You Think. We got this email from Jeff, who says, as a Texas Democrat, I feel my vote for president hasn't counted in decades. Nebraska and Maine split their electoral votes. If 49% of Texans voted for Biden, why shouldn't he get 49% of the electoral votes? David, could that be a solution?
Well, I think the best way to think to discuss this, actually, I want to go back to something Greg, who I believe had either called or emailed, said earlier, which is that the Electoral College gives rural states, people living in rural areas, a say. And we've heard this from a number of callers and emailers, that if you didn't have an Electoral College, the big cities would decide who the president is. So I think that's a really important point, not because it's accurate, it's totally inaccurate, but because it's very commonly misunderstood. So, and it ties into this issue with Texas Democrats as well. So I'm just going to read you a list of the 10 least urban states in the country: Maine, Vermont, West Virginia, Mississippi, Montana, Arkansas, South Dakota, Kentucky, Alabama, North Dakota, and New Hampshire. Now, of that list, New Hampshire and Maine's second district, for a variety of reasons, are competitive in the Electoral College. Candidates asked for their votes. The other 8 of the most rural states in the country, no one shows up to. No one's asking for those votes. And if you vote in those states, the outcome is essentially predetermined. We already know who's going to win. No one, it does not really affect the outcome. So if you're a rural voter in one of the most rural states in the country, the Electoral College is actually sapping you of your power to pick the president. The most urban states in the country have a lot of electoral votes. That's not just places like California, but places like Florida, even Utah, which is predominantly urban, even though it's a very Republican state. So when we talk about the Electoral College in general, the question is, why do we do it this way? Why do we have some people's votes matter and some people's don't? And the answer is, it's just a quirk of history. There's not a good reason we do things this way. And so that brings us back to this issue of, what do you do if you're a Texas Democrat? What do you do if you're a California Republican? And right now, the hard truth is that your vote is essentially wasted when you vote for president. It may be useful in other places, but when you vote for president, your vote is wasted. And I do think there is something, and it does not matter which party you support, that is fundamentally undemocratic about a system that wastes so many votes. And so regardless of how we want to move to a system where the person who wins the most votes wins the election, that is something we need to figure out how to do. Now, I will say the problem with splitting the state's electoral votes the way that we just talked about in Texas is, it's fine if you do that, but everyone has to do it the same way. Because what would happen is, if Texas split its electoral votes, then that would be an unfair advantage to Democrats, because most other states don't split their electoral votes. We've actually seen efforts by Republicans in states like Pennsylvania, back when Republicans thought Pennsylvania was a blue state, to split their votes so that instead of Pennsylvania going, say, 20-0 to the Democrat, it would go 12-8 or 11-9 to the Democrat and essentially take Pennsylvania off the board. But we keep talking around these complicated issues. And ultimately, what's fascinating about the Electoral College is it's actually pretty simple. There's no good reason for it, and we should all be trying to get rid of it, especially because it doesn't particularly help the people many of us think it would help.
Well, we've only got about a minute left here. Really quickly, Alex writes on Facebook, nearly every reason people give to keep the Electoral College is actually a reason for the structure of the Senate, and none of them outweigh the fact that the one elected office on the planet that represents all Americans does not represent them all equally. Very quickly, David, what do you think is the answer here? We know from Ned that he thinks we need to get rid of the Electoral College. What is the fix?
I think the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact, and I should make clear, one reason I wrote Democracy in One Book or Less is because political reform language tends to be really bloodless, but it's actually really important. You know, something like the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact, sounds like some kind of punishment. But actually, what it does is it's a way of getting around the Electoral College, as Ned mentioned, without a constitutional amendment. It would make sure that everyone's vote counts in this country, whether you're a Texan Democrat or a California Republican. And it would get us back to this point, to your last email, where the person who represents all of us, the President of the United States, is really elected by all of us, and it would take some of the vagary and danger out of the system. So you add all that up, sounds like a good idea. I say let's do it.
Well, we might have to spend another hour talking about the Electoral College. There's still lots to get to. That was David Litt. He's a former speechwriter for President Obama and author of the new book, Democracy in One Book or Less: How It Works, Why It Doesn't, and Why Fixing It is Easier Than You Think. Also with us, Ned Foley. He's the director of the Election Law Program at The Ohio State University's College of Law and author of the book, Presidential Elections and Majority Rule: The Rise, Demise, and Potential Restoration of the Jeffersonian Electoral College. Thanks to you both. Remember, we're on Instagram. Follow us at The 1A Show. Today's producer was Amanda Williams, with help from Katie Klein and Haley Blassingame. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Jen White. Thanks for listening, and let's talk more soon. This is 1A.